The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 595, recorded on December 2nd, 2020.
Welcome to the 595th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 428th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
Right, so I've been having so many problems with Windows. I had to reinstall Windows. And now Microsoft Store and Microsoft Game Pass thinks I'm a pirate. And the D drive is full of nasty software, which I shouldn't have. And it's not going to install anything to the D drive until I get rid of it. But it won't tell me what I have to get rid of.
That's very strange.
Like, is it not recognizing your login, or it's just...
Oh, no, it recognizes me. It just says, hey, you have apps that were on another device on your D drive. So we're not going to install to that drive. And that's my 3-terabyte gaming drive. My other drive is a 500-gigabyte SSD with very little room for games. So, yeah. I told Microsoft, you know, if you don't want me to buy games on your system, then fine. Because here's the thing. Steam, I told it, well, Steve said, oh, you're on the seat. No, I'm on the D drive. It said, oh, there they are. Okay, here are all your games. Don't worry about it. We know where they are. Meanwhile, Epic is really bad. It did not recognize the games, and the official, this is the official thing, if, and I posted this on Twitter, and it got a lot of laughs, they said, well, you know what, we don't have a way for it to recognize your games, so this is what you can do. You can partially install it, stop installing, and it'll know it's there. What? What? Here it is. Here's the exact words. Can the Epic Games Launcher detect previously installed games? If you previously install a game on a computer and remove the Epic Games Launcher or reinstall window, there's no feature in the Epic Games Launcher that'll detect game files. However, there is a workaround that may detect previously downloaded games. 1. Open your Epic Games Launcher. 2. Go to your library. 3. Begin downloading the game you already have on your hard drive. 4. After a few seconds of it downloading, pause the download. 5. Epic Games Launcher by right-clicking the tray icon on it. Yeah, you're basically having to trick your own machine into thinking you have the game. Here was my solution. I deleted all the games and reinstalled them.
That's typically what you would have to do if it's not reading installations. You reinstall them.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Steam said, oh, there they are. You're good to go.
Yeah, that's just a huge... pain in the ass, though. Like, that's a lot of work just because it won't recognize a file area.
Hey, it's miles better than Windows saying, hey, fuck you, you're a pirate. We know that you stole those things on your drive, so get rid of them or else we won't let you save things to that drive.
That's just bizarre. I don't know why that doesn't make any sense.
Because Steam realized a long time ago... They're not going to try and stop pirates. They don't care. Good old games is the same way. They have no DRM at all. So you can just run the games from the only thing you have to do is create the shortcuts.
Yeah, you could just download the install.
Not even a download. I mean, they're already on the drive. I just have to go to find the game and just, you know. EA was weird. But at least, you know, all I had to do is, there's a little gear icon and it allows you, well, if you have the game, just let us know where it is. Okay, it's over there. Ah, gotcha. Thumbs up.
Yeah, you should be able to install the game to either drive. That shouldn't make a difference. I don't know. That's really weird.
Yeah, and the poor Microsoft rep was confused as all hell. And they were sorry for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Looking online, I'm not the only person. Now, the one thing I did was I had to take control of the drive, which I did, meaning I can put any other file there except for apps. So this is saving to the D drive, the podcast, but nothing else. No apps, that's all. No Microsoft apps. Other apps, they don't care. And I just wrote the open letter and posted it on Twitter and said, look, you know what? You're not making a good case for your store if Steam handles this, and you can't. Let me ask you a question, Microsoft. Whose store is more successful, Windows 10 store or Steam? I'll give you 1 second. 1 second to answer. Maybe you should copy the people whose store is working and has worked for the past 16 years. I remember that, too, because I was one of the first users of Steam. Because I pre-ordered Half-Life 2. I got the Ultra pack for $125. Got a bunch of postcards. I still have them. I don't know where they are. But I know I have them. They're crappy postcards, but, you know, they're a souvenir. Now everybody's saying Black Ops is... Oh, yeah. Call of Duty is having a lot of problems on the Xbox Series X.
Seems like it's having problems on every platform. Like they've rushed it out too early and it's just chock full of bugs.
Yeah. But I mean, it's loudest. People are loudest about it on the Xbox Series X. Which, by the way, I am glad I do not own right now. Simply because I want to get the second... I want to get the second batch, not the first batch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you may have a perfectly running PlayStation 5, so long as you don't, you know, let sleep with Spider-Man. Don't tempt fate.
that was something I did on the PS4, though, anyways, so that's just, like, I don't know, common practice, I guess. It's kind of silly, though, that if I didn't remember to do that for some reason, it would break my system. That's a concern.
Yeah, like I said, the pandemic screwed everybody. So, let's talk about scalpers for a moment. Now, there's only two news items, but there is some news items which we can talk about briefly. Scalpers are not having a fun time anymore. One, people are going to rob them. Two, that group in Europe, I think it's London, that has a warehouse full of 3,500 PS5s, they've released statements saying, well, we're actually the good guys because we're helping people make money. For one thing, no, you're not, because you're just ripping people off. I'm talking about the people that they have. Because if you know something about them, here's how it works. Suppose you get a PS5. You give it to them. They sell for, say, £1,500. You get £100 profit. Yeah, it's a multi-level marketing thing. You know, a pyramid scheme. You know, it's a pyramid scheme. But then they said, and they had the gall to say, well, you know, just because you know, your child won't get a PS5, but the people who have children they have to feed will have more than nothing, which is bullshit. Let me ask you a question. Who's buying that PS5 for $1,500? Yeah, some rich kid. So essentially what you're saying is some rich kid deserves it more than a poor kid.
I can't believe there are people stupid enough to pay triple.
Well, they can.
More.
Well, they can. That's the entire point, though. They're what's known as whales. They're rich and they don't care. They can afford it. You or I have to measure the difference between paying $500 or $1,000 for something. These people don't. That's the entire point. And these people started with the sneakers. You know, it arose from the sneakers. But here's the difference between sneakers and consoles. The scalpers who take these sneakers, they're limited edition. They only appear for 3 months. People only have to wait for Microsoft and Sony to send out new consoles.
Yeah, the PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series are not limited edition. Like, there's going to be more, and there's going to be plenty more.
Exactly.
And it's just wait. And, you know, one scalper asked a YouTuber if they could advertise their PS5 on their channel, or like a 10-second ad. Yeah, that's the wrong place to advertise. Even if the YouTuber said, okay, I'll take your money. So yeah, this reminds me of the Wii U. Do you remember that? Scalpers hoarded Wii U's, and then no one bought Wii U's. And they were stuck with junk that they couldn't get rid of. Oops.
That's what I would hope would happen with these consoles, that people wouldn't buy scalpers.
Well, that's probably what's going to happen, you know. I wonder if their scalpers know we're in a global recession.
No, I don't think they care.
I wonder if they know that coronavirus didn't increase incomes.
The one that got 1,000 consoles must have dropped at least 500,000.
Well, that's just the thing, though. They didn't. They had... Here's the thing. People, I think it's like $40 subscription to this site. So, yeah, the people who did it... Well, actually, the people who actually bought the consoles and gave it to them plunked down, okay, $550, say.
Yeah.
They're not going to see any of it back.
Yeah. And then, did you talk about the fact that somebody was dumb enough to, like, gloat about it, and then they got doxed? And
Yeah. I already met, I said that's the first thing I said. But here's the other thing, is that it reminds me of that guy who... It reminds me of that guy who hoarded, what's it called again? Disinfectant. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Back in March. And
that.
He got pilloried all over the place, and they confiscated the entire hoard.
Yeah.
What I'm hoping is that the people who joined this group realize they just got ripped out of almost $600, and they leave. And then the people who run this group have a bunch of consoles. They're just going to have to sell at cost. Because here's something that people don't know. For actual brick-and-mortar retailers, and also regular retailers, they do not sell consoles for a profit. None of them do. They get pennies more for selling a console. They make no money on making a console. The name of the podcast is the TD Gaming Podcast. TD stands for Technical Diversions. And they used to sell Wiis and stuff like that. And basically, you know, when they get the Wiis, they have to pay... what you pay for the Wii. There's very little profit in selling a console. Brick-and-mortar people get their money from selling software and peripherals. That's it. Which explains why Microsoft has a deal with GameStop, I think, because Microsoft is saying to GameStop, listen, you sell the Xbox Series X's, we're going to give you bonuses for it. You know, you're going to see money for it. Which really incentivizes GameStop to want to sell the Xbox Series X's when they're in stock, whenever that is. Like I said, you know, it's funny. This is the only Xbox that I've never been able to get within a month of its release. The only one I had a problem with was the Xbox 360. And thank God for Toys R Us, because... And thank God for the modularity, because I was able to buy a core system plus the hard drive. For those who don't remember, there used to be two flavors of Xbox 360. One was the core, the other one was the premium. But the premium was just the core with a hard drive slapped on at no extra cost, you know. So when I bought the core system and the hard drive, I was basically paying for the premium system. So, yeah, thank God for Toys R Us. Of course, there was no pandemic. I mean, there was Xbox 360s in stock. The original Xbox I bought on launch, the Xbox One I bought on launch, the Xbox Series X I bought on launch. So, I mean, I should do a gaming history about the Dreamcast, because the Dreamcast is what got me back into console gaming. I bought the Dreamcast for $50, and it was the best $50 I ever spent. Because they kept on releasing software for that thing. I mean, they released the 2K games for it, and that was great. And the VMUs. And what annoys me is there's a lot of stuff that NBA 2K2 did on the Dreamcast that the current gen 2K basketball can't do. It's like, what? Anyways, we're going way afield. But yeah, I mean... Yeah, the scalpers are going to feel the pinch in a few months, which makes me happy. Commentary?
I really hate the scalpers just as much as I hate hackers.
In Europe, there's a law against scalping music tickets. Or just tickets, actually. You know, music, sports, you know, that sort of stuff. I'm wondering why they haven't applied it to other stuff.
I don't know. That's a good question.
And there's one thing I learned through all of this. In the end, it's better to buy from brick and mortar. Just buy the physical thing. Or pre-order at the store if you can. Don't do online, because then Amazon drivers will steal your shit. That's a broad statement, I know. That's the lesson I got out of it.
Yeah.
And if there's a raffle for a new console, by all means, go for it.
Oh, God, another raffle.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, TJ got his through the raffle, so.
Yeah.
I mean, he had to pay for it, but still.
Although I saw that other people tried to do another, they did another PlayStation Direct ordering, and a lot of people had a lot of frustration trying to get in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way that scalping group worked is that they said that it's not bots, they're lying about that, but they did say there's a lot of people who wait on sites, and their only job is to wait for it to be online and then snatch them up. So, yeah, I'm glad to see that they're probably going to crash and burn. And if they're trying to do PR for themselves, don't bother. I remember the first time it was like, oh, look, I have 56 PS5s, and what are you going to do about it? It wasn't this scalper group. It was some individual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think he has Twitter anymore. I think he had to close his Twitter account, probably. Because I'm going to tell you something. You know, if you want to play a villain, Be prepared to be treated like a villain.
Yeah.
People will get salty, especially online. And you're not going to be able to sell them, because people are just going to do... I remember the NVIDIA cards that were scalped. I remember seeing stories that people were leaving bids of $50,000 so that the payment defaulted. Because there was no way that anybody was going to pay $50,000 for a card,
yeah,
and then take off the bid at the last second. Stuff like that. Anyways, we're going to move on to the gaming flashback, and I'm surprised we did not do this gaming flashback before, but apparently we never did. Gaming flashback: Alan Wake. Alan Wake is an action-adventure game developed by Remedy Entertainment and published by Microsoft Studios, released for the Xbox 360 and Microsoft Windows. The story follows best-selling thriller novelist Alan Wake as he tries to uncover the mystery behind his wife's disappearance during a vacation in the small fictional town of Bright Falls, Washington, no relation to Silent Hill, all while experiencing events from the plot of his latest novel, which he cannot remember writing, coming to life. In its pacing and structure, Alan Wake is similar to a thriller television series, with episodes that contain plot twists and cliffhangers. The game itself consists of 6 episodes, and the storyline is continued by 2 special episodes titled The Signal and The Writer that were made available as DLC in the same year of the game's release. Together, they make the first season of a possibly longer story. Additionally, a 6-episode live-action web series called Bright Falls acts as a prequel to the game, and a number of related books also expand upon the Alan Wake story. Chiefly written by Sam Lake, Alan Wake took over five years to create, an unusually long development time in the game industry. The game was originally developed as an open-world survival game as an antithesis to Rare's prior linear Max Payne games, but struggled over 3 years in merging the gameplay with the live-action the action thriller story that they wanted to tell. After an intense two-inch period, the team reworked the game to be a more traditional linear game, broken into an episodic approach, but which better supported the planned narrative structure and was capable of reusing much of the open-world assets already built. The game received positive reviews from critics and was offered praise for its visual, sound, narrative, pacing, and atmosphere. Alan Wake was awarded the first spot in Time Magazine's list of the top 10 video games of 2010. Alan Wake's American Nightmare, a full-on standalone title, was released in February 2012 on the Xbox Live Arcade service. A sequel was in development but was canceled. However, the scrapped sequel became the foundation and inspiration of Remedy's next title, Quantum Break. Now, to make sure that I hadn't used this before, I did a search, and episode 252 in 2012, the podcast of this podcast, had an article that said Alan Wake on PC because Remedy was a nagging little kid to Microsoft. Meaning that they had to fight to get the PC version out. So, yeah. Alan Wake is a game I never finished. But it has a lot of fans.
I haven't played it either, but it seems like a very story-heavy a game. I don't know if it's any... I don't know if it has multiple endings or it's just one kind of ending, so it may be a little similar to Resident Evil, but without the zombies.
It doesn't have multiple endings, that I know. It is a story, but you uncover the story as it goes on. You're picking up these little pages of the story as you go along, basically revealing what's going to happen to you, or what happened to you, but not usually what's going to happen to you, which is why Alan is so freaked out about it. So Quantum Break and what was the latest game by Control are both set in the same universe.
Mm-hmm.
So, TJ.
Like a very suspenseful game. I like suspense more than graphic horror.
Well, here's
the
thing.
Was such an absolute Stephen King wet dream fanfic.
Here's the thing. It wasn't just a fanfic. Stephen King was actually referenced in it.
Yeah, like
Alan Wake was a fan of Stephen King.
Yeah, but like it is such a Stephen King fanfic wet dream that it's like everything that you would expect. It's very. Okay, so there are...
Well, here's the thing. Before we go on,
hold on.
I know, but TJ, we have to talk about the one gameplay mechanic that was not discussed in the article, and that is when you're doing combat, you'll be facing these creatures of darkness. They're like smoky things, and in order to kill them, you have to shine a light on them first. And a flare can outright destroy a bunch of them like a grenade. The entire game was based on light and shadow, and that's why it was so graphically beautiful.
Yes, but there's also the aspect of...
I can remember that. That sounds very good. Very creative.
Yeah, and then there's also the aspect of just, like, characters that are taken over by these feelings of hatred and anger that just become, like, sort of demonic entities, which is, like, such a Stephen King thing. That's such a Shining thing. Like, there's no lack of characters throughout Stephen King novels that are like, follow that same sort of vibe. But it's done well here. I will say that. Like, I really liked Alan Wake as far as just, like, the style it did. It's very strikingly different from what Max Payne did around the same time, which, you know, Max Payne, like, innovated the bullet time slow motion, like, gun, like, I think they were. I can't even remember if they did bullet time first.
No, it was Remedy. Remedy did it first. Actually, that's not true, but Remedy made it... Oh, no, I'm thinking of Dark... I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Blade. So, Matrix is always praised for doing bullet time, but actually Blade did it first. I think Max Payne was the first to do it in computer, in a computer game.
I was just trying to remember if, like, Max Payne or Matrix came out first. Because I know that when Matrix came out, it, like, made that whole visual style very, very popular for a short time.
So, yeah, Max Payne came out 2 years after The Matrix came out.
Oh, there you go.
But I'm going to say Blade did the bullet time thing first.
Right, but Max Payne is the one that, like, made it super popular. And like.
No, I mean, Matrix made it popular, and then Max Payne copied it. Alan Wake and Max Payne were also completely opposites in one other way. Max Payne had the stupidest, most boring, idiotic story ever. While Alan Wake was engaging and mysterious. And yeah, I'll be the first to say that Alan Wake's story was pretentious. It was pretentious as heck. But at least it was well-written pretentiousness.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked Max Payne too.
I mean, I liked the story, but I can see it was pretentious as heck.
Yeah.
It was trying too hard. I don't like to make that phrase, but yeah, it was really trying hard to be Stephen King.
So I guess you didn't like the Max Payne using drugs to get superpowers?
Nah, that was fine. I mean, you do that in so many games. You do that in, what was the name of that game? You do it in Fallout, for crying out loud. Fallout did it first. But you also did it in Far Cry. You did it in, the other thing is that, this is the first game in which it seemed like Remedy really wanted to become TV producers, because one of the things that fans love to do was just sit down and watch TV in the game, and the TV had these video clips of a show that was basically sort of a, actually, I think it was American, wasn't it? Wasn't the TV show in Alan Wake called American Nightmare or something like that? I'm trying to remember the name of the show. Do you remember?
There was a whole bunch of different ones. I can't remember what the suspense one was, but it was something like X-Files.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you watch all of Remedy's work after Alan Wake, you sort of get this idea that they have this thing they want to do. Quantum Break was basically a TV show with gameplay elements added into it, you know? Let's see, Alan Wake in-universe TV shows. Night Springs, that was the name of the show, right. Yeah, that was the, there were six episodes of Night Springs in the show. It was basically Twilight Zone. It even had the same font as Twilight Zone. And you had someone actually doing a dead-on impression of Rod Serling in that.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Every, 2 years, people really start expressing the real desire to see an Alan Wake 2. People love that game. I mean, like I said, it has a bunch of books. It has, you know, all this lore around it, and people just want more Alan Wake. And I think they were a little disappointed with Quantum Break because they wanted an Alan Wake game, although they did rhyme.
Yeah, I mean, when Control was first teased, I think people were also hoping for Alan Wake, but Control is great.
Yeah, I haven't played it. It's on Game Pass. I will at some point. But yeah, Alan Wake, you know, and the thing is that it got a lot of praise, but it also got a lot of mixed audience reviews, because I think people were expecting something different from Alan Wake at the time. You know, over time, people started growing more and more attached to it, recognizing it as its own genre. You know, it may have been in third-person action adventure, but there was something different about it. And there still is something different about it. It's, you know what I think it is? I think it's actually a proto-walking simulator with a lot more combat. Because there's a lot of exploration. There's a lot of puzzle solving. I mean, you know, I could easily see Alan Wake going around Firewatch. And also, this is the first game. I think this is the first game to popularize setting things in the Pacific Northwest. I can't remember any other games that took place in the Pacific Northwest and depicted the woody, you know, that genre of game now. You know, there's a lot of games that are now set in the Pacific Northwest, especially Don't Nod games, you know. And I can't. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that was also a central piece of emulating Stephen King, is that, like, all of Stephen King's books take place
in New England,
in
Maine, yeah. But I will say, you know, the opening scenes of Alan Wake are, you know, they're just very engrossing. All you're doing is walking around, and, the lighting in the game was revolutionary. That's why I did the entire light and dark thing, because it's impressive even now. And it's been remastered virtually by the Xbox backwards compatibility, you know? I mean, if you see it around for, like, $10, go ahead and buy it. Just check it out. It's unlike most games you'll ever play, except for that bad Alone in the Dark game, which had the same mechanic of light makes them, but done much, much worse.
Yeah, like one of the worst camera controls in the... I hate games that try to move between third person and first person that much.
Do you move into... No, I don't think... Yeah, you're never in first person in Alan Wake, are you? Everything's in third person, right?
The only game that I can think of that has successfully done that well is Silent Hill 4, The Room. And even that is, like, the first person and third person are so very separated.
Yeah,
from each other.
I mean, when you're in first person when you're in your room, and you're in third person when you're in the other world. The other world in the room is just so bad, though. It's just... It's amateur hour when you're outside of the room. Look at me, I'm a ghost. Woo! I'm attacking.
I'll be the first to admit it's not a perfect experience. It's a very niche game.
Here's the thing about Silent Hill 4. I think it's a good game. It's just that you can tell where all the effort went. All the effort went to when you're inside your room. That's where most of the development time went. When you're outside, it's basic third person, and it's not even Silent Hill good. It's arcade game, sort of, you know?
It's the only Silent Hill where you spend exactly pretty much zero time in Silent Hill, which is just...
Well,
I always like it. I always like exploring every game's version of what Silent Hill should be.
Yeah, well,
and, like, even Downpour. I like Downpour a lot.
Yeah, the only problem with Downpour is that it's not scary.
It depends.
It's not scary. Yeah, monsters are not scary at all.
There are side points in the game, like things that are pretty much optional that it provides some pretty good moments. But, like, I would agree with you that the general gist of the game is, no, it's not that scary.
Here's the thing, Silent Hill Downpour was the Western game that came closest to being like the Japanese developed games. But they worked so hard on doing atmosphere that they forgot to make it scary.
Mm-hmm.
Did that one Tokyo horror game get released yet? I can't remember what it was called, but I know it's set in Tokyo. And it's supposed to be like Resident Hill.
Ghostwire Tokyo is probably the game. It's coming out next year, I do believe.
Okay, then.
Well, isn't The Medium coming out this year?
Do you believe that is coming out this year?
Yeah. And Bloober Team is just saying, yeah, it's Silent Hill. Yeah, we wanted to do Silent Hill. This is our Silent Hill. It's not going to be exactly like Silent Hill, but it's their version of Silent Hill.
Oh, no, they pushed it back to January 2021. Yeah, that was...
Yeah, that's still coming out in a month, so... I'll count it. I'll count it, folks. I'll count it as a 2020 game release. But hey, guess what? They haven't delayed Cyberpunk. So there's been no announcement yet.
You know what's funny is Cyberpunk is scheduled for December 10th, and the Game Awards is also scheduled for December 10th. And
I would say this: reviewers have their hands on it, though.
But I think it would be really funny if on December 10th, as the last announcement of the Game Awards, you're like,
yes,
2077 with a worldwide announcement. It's delayed again.
Yeah, it's a longer 2021 game, so hand back all those awards. But, tomorrow, Dragon Quest XI launches on the Xbox, so I already have it I've had it pre-installed for the past 2 months. It's been sitting on my Xbox hard drive for that long. So, I mean, it's not like I haven't already played it. I mean, I played it at E3. I know what it's like, so it'll just be me experiencing the entire story this time and getting achievements for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, talking about what we've been playing, guess what? I've been playing The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners. Actually, not that much, because I've been so busy that I haven't had much time to do VR gaming. But, yeah. It's unusual in that it's not... Here's the thing. Whenever you play a VR game, sometimes you can feel the sides in that it's a very limited experience. You know? For one reason. The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners is an entire game.
Yes. That is one of the few... I would say it's one of the few that are like that... That are like
full-fledged.
Full-fledged games. The other one being Half-Life Alyx.
Well, there's some others, but I'm just saying. And what clued me in is that it has crafting. Okay, if it has crafting, that means it expects you to look around and find stuff. Which is going to be a really big demand, because you're wearing a VR helmet, and if you're only playing in hour-long segments... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners is my number two favorite VR game of 2020. And there's very specific reasons for that. I recognize that it's not a perfect game. However, it is comfort food. And,
so,
And the strengths of it are what I value. Yeah. It is extremely satisfying to pummel a zombie in the head with a fire axe.
You have to grab both hands of that fire axe and just bring it down. I mean, there are some sensitivity issues. Sometimes the game will think, you're not really doing it heavy enough, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But taking a screwdriver, and what I like is that you can do it one of two ways. You can either hold your arm out and start putting that screwdriver into the zombie's head, or you can grab the zombie's head, bring it close, and then start doing it. It's like, just grab his head, yeah, take that.
Yeah. And, like, the other thing that's pretty good about that game is the ambidextrous nature of it.
Yeah, you can say you're a lefty or a righty.
Because here's the thing about me. I am right-hand dominant in most things.
But like, not with a gun.
I write, I use my phone, I do all sorts of things with my right hand. But my left eye is better, and so I often shoot with my left hand.
Right.
And so that's something that... For some reason, that's something that Half-Life Alyx doesn't allow you to do. You can't switch the hand that you use the pistol with. It will automatically revert back to your right hand.
When it comes to guns, I'm ambidextrous, but...
Which is kind of a bummer, because I would rather be able to drop the pistol into my left hand and fire it from that when I want to line up a shot carefully. And I can do that in Saints and Sinners. It's super easy to do. You literally just toss the gun to your right, from your right to your left hand.
Or you can grab the gun with both hands.
You can do that too.
Yeah, I tried something and I laughed when it actually worked. So I took my gun, put it at my own forehead, you know, and pulled the trigger. Bang! Game over.
Yep. It recognizes if you shoot it yourself.
They let you do that? That's fun.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I was like, why would they... And then I think, oh, yeah, what if you're surrounded by zombies? It's like, you can just say, oh, fuck this. I don't want to become a zombie.
There are actual suicide mechanics in Saints and Sinners.
Yeah. But I was surprised that you could do that. And it was, here's the thing. I was doing it during the tutorial thing. So I said, what happens if I do this? Oh, I die. Gee, so that's what putting a gun to your head and opening firing does.
another interesting thing. Like, I love the physics and Walking Dead Saints and Sinners. You can actually, like, I was in a rather unfortunate moment. I was walking up on a NPC that had a quest for me, and I was tossing my pistol to myself, just seeing how high I could throw it and catch it. And it came down, and I accidentally pulled the trigger and shot the NPC in the face.
I shot Marvin in the face.
Oops. So, like, okay, but, like, I appreciate that. I appreciate that the physics in the game allow for things like that to occur.
And, you know, I like the inventory system. I didn't think I would. So here's the thing. You have several parts virtually on you. So, like, depending on, say I'm a left-hander, right? If I move down to my left and pull, there's the holsters there, so I'm going to pull out a gun. And on my right thigh, there's going to be whatever small, like a screwdriver or a knife or whatever, right? If I reach behind my left, if I reach behind my right, I grab a large, you know, like an axe. If I reach behind with my right, I pull out my my inventory, my backpack. On my left, on my right side, if I go there, it's going to have my little notebook, which I can look at, which basically serves as the quest thing. And if I do it on my left chest, I have my flashlight. And what I can also do is I can have my flashlight, shake it to make it power, then put it back on my chest so that it's actually lighting from my chest, so I don't have to hold it out in front of me. But I could hold it out in front of me if I want to look further ahead. So there's a lot, you know, it really gets you acquainted with the fact that you're a virtual person. I'm also happy with the fact that you don't actually see yourself, your own body, because that can be distracting. I've heard this from games like, what was it, Boneworks. Yeah, Boneworks, in which you actually see your entire body. The problem is your body gets in the way of stuff.
Yes.
So.
Sound design is pretty good in that game too. If you lose, if you use loud tools or loud weapons,
yeah, zombies will hear you. You can actually have the setup in which you can voice activate. You know, have your microphone on. But the problem is that if you start talking to yourself, the zombies will hear you.
Right, and like that makes a weapon like so that in that case it makes a like a pistol. Maybe you want to put that away. Maybe you want to pull out your bow and arrow, which is harder to use, but it's quiet.
Yeah. I haven't found the bow and arrow yet. Like I said, I haven't done much of the game because I've just been so busy and haven't been able to break out the VR lately. But I was liking what I saw. That game made me dizzier than any other game, and not because I got nauseous, but just because I had to wear the helmet for so long. So it's just a matter of parceling out time for that. So.
Well, I'm glad that you're checking it out, though. It's a fun one.
Well, here's the thing. Humble Bundle had a VR bundle.
Mm-hmm.
And for $17, I got 8 VR games.
That's
so cool. So yeah, still not done Half-Life Alyx yet. I will. It's not like I'm not going to buy it and play it at some point. Actually, I'm hoping the winter sale is coming up, so I'm hoping that they have that for a bargain. So I have a feeling that Half-Life Alyx is going to be a lot better technically. But so yeah. Far, you know, there is a grittiness to The Walking Dead Saints and Sinners that I haven't seen in any of the games yet.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, Walking Dead Saints and Sinners is comfort food. That said, Half-Life Alyx is, like, the full package. Yeah. It's engaging from a mental standpoint. The world is beautiful.
Walking Dead is beautiful, too, but in an ugly way.
Well, I mean, like I guarantee you, Jonah, the first time that you step into Half-Life Alyx and get into the first scene, like just the breath of the world is breathtaking.
Yeah. So, anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Trials from Zero, but I also checked a Let's Play of Little Hope.
Oh, God, yeah. In other words, Silent Hill without any of the charm.
There's no... Well, I guess there's no zombies.
No.
But there are terror aspects happening.
I'm going to spoil the game right now, because I don't think the game is worth it. It's Scooby-Doo.
Little Hope?
Yeah, it's Scooby-Doo.
It's not Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo.
There's no arch-villain that you unmask.
Here's the problem with that. Spoiler, there's nothing supernatural going on in that game or Man of Medan. And that's what really pisses me off about these games. Can they please commit to something?
I disagree. I think there was supernatural.
No, there isn't. There isn't. That's the problem with Supermassive Games. There's no supernatural going on in either game.
Okay. Did you see the movie? I can't remember what it's called, but basically,
I'm going to give you 4 words here.
Finish my goddamn sentence.
Go ahead.
It's on the bus with a bunch of dead people. Nobody else can see them, and he's helping them cross over. I think that's the point of Little Hope.
Nope.
Is that this guy, bus driver, is helping these spirits cross over, or they get damned forever.
No.
When they disappear, he's helped them cross over.
I'm going to spoil the entire game for you with 4 words. It's all a dream.
It wasn't a dream.
I'm telling you right now, the ending of the game is it's all a dream. It's all in his head.
Okay, first off, there were supernatural things in both the first two games.
Not really, no. The first game was basically Manchurian Gold ended up being a really toxic psychedelic gas that caused you to see things. Like, when you see that occult book, when you're out of the toxic gas, it's actually a manual on how to transport the thing. Nothing in that game, everything in Supernatural in Man of Medan is basically hallucinations caused by the Manchurian Gold toxic gas.
Well, sure, but it causes some of those hallucinations to actually...
No, actually, what happened... Here's the thing. One hallucination is you see a rat chewing out of you. That's hallucination, and if you try to kill the rat, you're actually stabbing yourself.
Yes, but there are other deaths in that game that, yes, most of them are, turn out to be something self-inflicted, but there are a couple that are not.
No, they...
I know, because I've seen a death compilation of that entire game.
Yeah,
I'm the morbid type of person that goes into horror games.
I watched it, too, after playing it.
I just want to see what they do with, the ways in which she can die at some point. And...
Some of the deaths are depicted as supernatural, so it doesn't break the thing. But again, going back to this, I wish they would actually have something that's really supernatural. It's not, it's all a dream. It's not a toxic ass. No, it's really something that it can kill you because it takes away. Here's the thing. Until Dark, at least the serial killer was real. You know? You felt tension in that game because the serial killer was real.
The supernatural element was real in that game, too.
Yeah, but it was still a serial killer.
Yeah, but then there's a twist, and it's
real or not. Real or not, it was still a real serial killer.
No. That tells me that you've only played half of Until Dawn.
Whatever. I'm just saying, Man of Eden, I have not replayed because the plot is boring, and I didn't want to go through it. Little Hope, ditto.
Here's the twist on Until Dark. It's actually like a supernatural creature
That's fine. I mean, but here's the thing. It's a creature.
But it's a supernatural creature.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, but here's the thing. It's a real threat.
And then, and as far as these other two games go, there's a Twilight element. There's a Twilight Zone element to them.
The problem is with those games, too? Is that the protagonists have no agency over their actions. The pirates come, force them on the ship, and basically all they're doing is here's the thing. James Sunderland went into Silent Hill. It was his choice.
The problem, Jonah, is that with mental disorders, they don't just magically go away. That's why the guy is being haunted by spirits is because he's...
Yeah, but let's compare Little Hope with Silent Hill now.
Mental disorders don't magically go away, Jonah, just because he's been put into a police car or whatever.
Yeah, the problem is, Scott, is that you can say that any way you like. Silent Hill did it better because James Sunderland had agency in his actions, okay? He had his own agency. One of the things that these games have is pinball protagonists in which things happen to them, which is why I really don't like the Tomb Raider games. Because here's the thing, Lara Croft is always saying, I must do this, I must do this. No, I want to hear her say, I want to do this.
Well, let's break something down. Did what better? What did they do better?
In Silent Hill? About everything.
No, what did they do better?
We're not going to get into this right now. So you watched. We can have this discussion another time because we're. So Scott, you said you played Trials of the Sea. You also watched Little Hope. You didn't buy it or play it or anything. You just watched the videos for it.
I just watched a Let's Play. Okay. I was playing it, so I decided to watch it, and he played the whole thing, and he gave his own similar reaction that he felt that there was no agency when they. Yeah. Made them just disappear, like it just didn't matter, and he basically was saying, like what you were saying, wants them to commit to doing supernatural, have it be there and be real, and because if he replaced it, he feels that the tension wouldn't be there because it wouldn't matter.
You know what's really frustrating about it, though? The production values on all these games, Until Dark, Man of Eden, and Little Hope, they are off the charts. I mean, here's the thing.
Yeah.
If Supermassive Game made a VR game that's a Dark Project game. And had a better story, that would be amazing. By the way, Vorper allows you to play Amnesia in VR, and I'm not sure I'm ready to do that.
Yeah.
So have you played... Is that it, though, Scott? You only watched the Let's Play. Did you play anything else besides Minecraft?
Yeah, because, you know, I guess I'm waiting to get a better computer, and I want to get the Phoenix Immortal.
Oh, someone wants to play it with ray tracing, huh?
And Oceanhorn 2.
Are you really...
There's a lot of games I want to play.
But I'm just saying, you want to get a new rig. Does that mean you really want to play with ray tracing?
Yeah,
Minecraft?
It would be nice to have that and not have my computer get all chugged and slowed down.
Yeah. By the way, wasn't there Minecraft news in the past 2 weeks, major Minecraft news? I'm trying to remember. Because I remember reading something besides people having to have a Microsoft account, even with the Java version now. There was something else, though.
The snapshots for 1.17 are coming out.
Right.
I don't think there's been any major news right now.
Yeah. Are you going to get the Star Wars pack?
I'm going to migrate my account when they start doing that. They haven't started yet.
Oh. Because they have the Star Wars DLC now for Minecraft.
Oh, that. I'm not going to purchase any DLC.
Oh, right. There was also something else. Someone used Google Maps to recreate the world in Minecraft.
Wow.
Completely New York City, because there's a lot of cities which are really down to the details.
Yeah.
So you have things like New York City, all in Minecraft. Minecraft blocks.
I did see there were stories where people were building Dublin and London. So, you put in the time, you could build anything you want.
But here's the thing: when you're using Google Maps, you have you have a lot of the work done for you. Then it's just a matter of putting textures.
Who's doing them for you? You have to do them yourself.
You have to, but you import the data. You import the data from Google Maps. That reminds me.
Yeah, how that works.
Oh, by the way, someone did something. A developer decided to do something that he wanted to do, but wasn't able to, and he finally was able to do a flight. He did his flight in Microsoft Flight Simulator as his flight was going in real time. So there's your Inception moment.
That's pretty crazy.
And here's the crazy part. He said that his flight, his Microsoft Flight Simulator was 4 minutes faster, for whatever reason. Maybe it was a better headwind in the game. And he compared it to real life, and they were virtually identical. So. Anyways, TJ, what have you been playing?
Empire of Sin.
Oh, okay.
So, this is Paradox Interactive's new jam, and they got together with Romero Games, which is John and Brenda Romero.
Right.
It is a 1920s Prohibition-era gangster business.
Oh, wait, are you talking about Empire of Sin?
Game. Yes, I did say Empire of Sin.
I thought you said Empire of the Sun. It's getting middling reviews, but it looks really interesting.
It is interesting, because it's so many different things, and not all of them work, but mostly it's fun. Mm. I'm a little bit biased, because I love 1920s gangster stuff.
Yeah, wait, did you play Scarface over and over?
Who's that?
Did you play Scarface over and over?
No, they have Al Capone in the game.
No, I mean, there was a game, Scarface, The World is Yours.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was GTA meets Scarface. And it was actually really highly rated.
But, I remember that game. I remember people liking that game a lot. Yeah. I've never had a chance to actually sit down and play it.
So, yeah, this takes place in 20 Chicago, right?
Yeah, and essentially, like, it's built like a real-time 4X game in which you take on a gang leader, and you build up your faction in your neighborhood, and you're, and it's the 1920s and Prohibition is going on.
Yeah, so you have guys named like Tommy Biscuits.
And your whole goal as one of these faction leaders is to build an underground, basically booze empire under the nose of the Prohibition Bureau, yeah. And battle and basically vie for control of the city against other gangster leaders, and basically make your faction the king of the booze biz in 1920s Chicago.
One of the combat stuff looks a lot like XCOM, but you said it's real time.
It is a lot like XCOM. Like every character, like. Okay, so let me start from the top. There's a 4X element here, where like you want to get control of buildings in your neighborhood, like turn them into whatever business you need them to be, between like speakeasies, breweries to produce alcohol, brothels, casinos, and hotels. And there are other gang factions that are trying to do the same. And some of them are like minor factions without a leader, and some of them are major factions that have other gang leaders. And each like major gang leader in the game, like Al Capone, they have a in-combat specialty, they have a business specialty, and they have a diplomacy specialty. So Capone's, he was like famous with the Tommy gun, so his combat specialty is that he'll rain down Tommy gun fire on an area,
yeah,
on the map. And in his business specialty, you can upgrade his breweries and speakeasies for cheaper prices.
All right.
And then, I forget his diplomacy specialty, but then you'll have a character like Mabel Riley of the Irish Mafia. And her specialty is she can chain a shot between three different targets, like a ricochet shot. And then she also has she can upgrade her casinos for cheaper, and her brothels don't get raided by the police as much.
Yeah,
because like that's a part of it, is that like as you're upgrading your businesses, you have to like also either bribe the police or upgrade like the deflection, basically make your place as hush hush as possible. To the point where, because if the suspicion raises too high, then the police will raid it and shut it down, and then you'll lose that business. And so you've got all sorts of these things to like manage between business and like heading into areas and taking over the buildings so that you can expand your empire, and trying to take over the neighborhood.
See, the main complaints I've heard about this game is you have all that, but it's kind of shallow. You know, like the economy is kind of shallow, diplomacy is shallow. You know, and it screams to me that people are going to be really looking forward to an Empire of Sin 2 when they really beef up the game and make it meatier and you know, I mean, the combat sounds like it's fine. You know, the looks beautiful. It just seems like a first draft of a sequel that's going to be far better.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's fair to say. It's a lot of things crammed into one game. Just like, but, because there's also an RPG and, like, questing element.
Yeah.
Every faction leader has, like, a personal... Like, your whole goal is to take over Chicago and expand from your one neighborhood into the whole city. But, like, along the way, each faction leader has, like, a story quest line that they personally deal with. Like I said, Mabel Riley, her whole, like... When you start the game as her... Her husband has just been killed in a car bomb, and he ran the gang, and so now she runs the gang. And there are elements of her gang that think she did it, and so they go rogue. But you've also got to figure out who killed her husband and why.
Hmm.
So like, there's every single faction leader has their own version of a personal quest line. So there are story elements to it. You can increase the skill and get new equipment for your gang leaders, and also hire henchmen that will become slowly more loyal to them over time, who can also be upgraded and stuff. And I like I said, there's so much going on in there, and yes, I agree that not all of it is high quality as it could be.
So we want to talk about who John Romero is first. For those who don't know, John Romero, and by the way, there's a TV show which I acted in called Masters of Doom, which talks about John Romero and John Carmack and Gus Hall, and not Gus Hall, Don Hall, and all these other people who helped create id Software. So John Romero is best known for Daikatana, And he was very much into the Rockstar mentality of being a developer. Daikatana bombed. He quickly went out of sight. I mean, there was that infamous ad, John Romero's about to make you his bitch, which he did not write, and he's quick to tell you that. But, you know, he became vilified for a while, and now he and his wife are basically indie developers. So it's nice to see that they were doing tiny little games. It's nice to see them making a good-sized indie game, you know, something that's on the level of, say, Phoenix Point, you know. So it's nice to see him getting back in the game in a big way, because this is available on Steam and Epic and all that stuff.
Yes. And it's mostly, from what I understand, Brenda Romero, his wife, was the lead designer.
Brenda and his wife? Did John have a sex change?
I said Brenda, his wife.
Oh, okay. I thought you said Brenda and his wife.
Brenda Romero was, like, the lead designer on the game.
Yeah.
John Romero is still involved, of course.
He is a very good tech guy. I mean, he's an ideas guy. I mean, not a tech guy. He's an ideas guy. Like, Quake, you know, John Carmack was all about the design of the levels and all that stuff. John Romero was about the stuff like, yeah, if you shoot a lightning gun in the water, you die immediately.
Mm-hmm. They even added a little homage to the Romero family line, because one of the faction leaders, apparently John Romero's great grandma was actually a underground gang leader.
Hmm.
So she's a playable faction leader in the game.
Cool.
Elvira Duarte.
Wow.
And there's like a lot of faction leaders too. Like they have a really good gamut of leaders to choose from. They have, like, the straight-up, full-on, hardcore gangsters and Al Capone and, like, some of his rivals. And
yeah,
also
the Irish gangs, yeah.
Who would join with them. They also have, like, some Spanish gangs, some Polish gangs, and like you mentioned, some other Irish gangs that weren't associated with Capone. And then they also have, like, gangs, like the... I think one of my favorites was Daniel McKee Jackson, who of the Vice Kings. Who Daniel McKee Jackson was a person from the 1920s who ran a quote unquote charity morgue business, mortician business, and he also ran casinos on the side. So he would give loans to people that didn't have enough to pay for family funerals. And take care of their funerals for cheap, like on these loans. But then he would also expect payback sometime.
Yeah, he died in 1929 though, so it's like he died at the very end of Prohibition.
Yeah, and he was and like in this game, like he's basically playing off that sort of like charitable front face mode, while also having sort of an underhanded business mode, and he's trying to basically use the mayor to get a committee spot in Chicago. So there's like a political aspect there with him, which is just fun to play through.
Yeah, but here's the thing. One thing about Daniel McKee Jackson is that he was very pro-civil rights at a time when that was almost unheard of.
Yes.
And people used to mock him, calling him the second Abraham Lincoln. Which is, you know...
Yeah. So it's like it's cool to see just how different each of these leaders sort of play and their approach to the game, their story, and then also their mechanics.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like I said, it's an interesting game. And it's the sort of game which people will probably be really looking forward to seeing what a sequel will bring.
Mm-hmm. Because I think it's cool for what it is right now. It could be better, but I also hope that they like patch it up to something for where it's broken.
Yeah. Excuse me. Well, you know, it's a nice little comeback for John Romero and his wife. Although she didn't have anything to come back from.
For sure. Paradox Interactive is good people to keep company with.
Yeah. See, did they do anything else recently is the question. No, it's just Empire of Sin. Yeah, just Empire of Sin. That's the only... Because Romero Games was basically doing a lot of little... I wouldn't say apps, but little micro games, you know. And this seems to be their first big release. So did you play anything else?
No, I was mostly playing this.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news now. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Xbox Hedgehog Picture kicks up Sega purchase rumors again. A mysterious social media post by Xbox marketing A mysterious social media post by Xbox marketing executive Aaron Greenberg hints at a major acquisition at Microsoft. Namely, the Hedgehog-themed post hints at Microsoft purchasing Sega, owners of the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise, among many others. Even though it is a much smaller company now, Sega and its Genesis console were once the first real competitors of Nintendo in the home console market. The Genesis thrived due to its software, a mix of superior versions of multi-platform games and distinctive first-party games. Many of Sega's franchises had a decidedly quirky atmosphere, including titles like Crazy Taxi, Space Channel 5, and Echo the Dolphin. And in the modern day, Sega is best known for Sonic the Hedgehog games, created by its subsidiary Atlus.
And games.
And games created by its subsidiary Atlus, such as the Persona series. First off, how dare them, because they also own Yakuza.
Well, and, that's... yeah.
I just want to point that out right now, but the latest rumor is from an unusual social media post from the aforementioned general manager of Xbox Games Marketing. The latest rumors come from an unusual social media post from the aforementioned general manager of Xbox Games Marketing. Greenberg recently made an Instagram post depicting a hedgehog using an Xbox controller. Of course, this brings to mind Sega's Sonic the Hedgehog, suggesting an acquisition. Microsoft's recent expensive acquisition of ZeniMax, which owns Bethesda, showed Microsoft's willingness to pay for iconic franchises, and a Sega acquisition would continue the trend. After all, Microsoft has expressed its desire for more acquisitions.
So, here's the other thing. I remember a couple of months ago, you remember they had that blue controller, which everybody associated with Sonic as well. It was the same color as Sonic. And here's the thing. Microsoft has been very buddy-buddy with Sega for a very long time. When the Xbox console first came out, Sony and Microsoft did a little publishing deal, which is why two games, one of which was Jet Set Grind Radio. It was Jet Set Grind Radio. And I forgot the other one, but it was also a major title, were both exclusive to the Xbox console. So it's not like they haven't had contracts before. And I'm wondering if this is not so much an acquisition. Maybe they just have a deal going, you know, like they just signed a contract to make three Xbox exclusive games or something like that.
I need to check something really quick.
Jet Set Radio Future was the name of the game.
It does seem like there's reason to believe that this might be happening. That. You know, and I'm sure Microsoft wants to buy a Japanese publisher of games. They'll find one, because I can't see no one wanting to take Microsoft money. So Sega seems like a optimal one for them to get.
Here's the thing about Sega is they're not anywhere near as big as they used to be in terms of value. They're now bargain basement price, and also Microsoft talked a lot about how they wanted to make games for kids. Sega can certainly do that.
There are a few reasons that I am not so sure about this. There is a couple things that might make me think that Sega would love to be bought by Microsoft, but so at the beginning of November, Sega Sammy sold off a majority of its physical arcades in Japan because COVID made sure that they weren't making any money this year. So they sold off pretty much 85% of their physical entertainment centers. And that included like pachinko parlors, arcades, any of the type of...
Konami must be really hurting right now. hey, Konami, are you so? How do you feel about dumping my Metal Gear Solid now?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or Kojima, really.
Yeah, that would be a dream for me if they would buy Konami and then make Suikoden games again.
I'm not thinking about Microsoft buying Konami. I'm just saying Konami must be really hurting since they basically became a pachinko business.
That's all they care about. They just want to make pachinko games. They don't care.
that would be sort of like who's an equivalent? Like say Ubisoft or some American say ZeniMax decided, you know what, we're gonna start making what are those things again? One arm bandits, slot machines from now on because they make so much money.
That seems Konami to be their logic. I don't, you know. They don't care about art, they just care about getting the money.
This is true.
Konami has showed scattered signs throughout the year of wanting to invest more thoroughly into games.
Well, I bet they're doing it now with the pachinko games being unavailable.
Like, there's rumor going around that we could see a Silent Hill reboot with the original Silent Hill team.
Could you imagine if Microsoft bought Konami while they're down like this? It's like, you might need a few bucks, Konami.
I don't know much about Konami's state of affairs right now, but I do know
they
that
can't be good.
The reason why Sega did that, Sega Sammy sold off their arcade, was specifically to look after their home video game front, which is arguably where they're most profitable.
But that's the problem though. They have to bolster themselves. I mean, just as a side note, I realized another reason why it was so easy for Microsoft to pick up ZeniMax. Is that there's a $100 million lawsuit against ZeniMax right now. And Microsoft paying, what was it, $7.5 billion? It's like, yeah, $100 million is sort of like, yeah, it's like a tax.
Yeah. Well, the other there's a couple other reasons why I don't think that this is going to happen anytime soon. For one, Phil Spencer recently said, like in mid-November, that he doesn't think Microsoft is trying to acquire any Japanese studios in particular.
Yeah, he's lying.
I mean,
he's lying. Come on. Are you going to believe when Todd Howard says stuff, you're going to believe him too?
I mean, I wouldn't expect that Phil Spencer would say it outright if he was lying.
I think he might say something like, at this point.
I don't know about that.
Also, Microsoft definitely wants to pick up a new studio. Here's the thing, Microsoft...
Hold on, hold up, hold the phone. The reason why he said that he doesn't think that Microsoft is actively pursuing a Japanese studio is because they already got Tango Gameworks in the Bethesda ZeniMax deal.
That's true, but Sega comes with Atlas, and I've noticed something. Have you also noticed it? That all of a sudden, all the Yakuza games are coming to the Xbox console when they never were before. And you're probably going to see Persona 4 Gold on, what's it called? When was it released? It was released in what, May?
Persona 4 Gold originally came out on the PSP, but then it was ported to Steam.
When did it come out on Steam again? Because here's the thing, is that when I was... doing the live stream of PC Gaming Show, Persona Gold 4 was listed as a Game Pass game on Mixer.
It was on the anniversary of the game, actually.
It was, but here's the thing. It was listed as a Game Pass game on Mixer.
Huh.
Someone made a mistake there, one way or the other. I'm willing to believe that once the year of exclusivity. It's going to pop up on Microsoft Game Pass.
Maybe.
No, like I said, there's a reason why it had a Game Pass tag on it, on Mixer, which was Microsoft's streaming service. So, we'll see. Now, Microsoft seems to be swooping in on companies that are in dire straits financially. Double Fine, In Exile... GameStop, ZeniMax. If Sega's in financial trouble, you know, Microsoft's going to sidle up and say, hey, we've been buddies before. But what I think is and we have to deal with the Instagram post, because, come on, you posted a hedgehog with a controller for no, with no context, from Aaron Greenberg, which makes me think it may not be an acquisition, but I think Microsoft and Sega have a three-game deal going on. You know, Microsoft's, you know, they may not buy Sega, but they may do a Mass Effect with Sega.
Hmm.
So it's entirely possible that there is a project that's that Microsoft and Sega are collaborating on. And here's the other thing. Who says it has to be a game? It could be a controller. It can be a peripheral. It could be a whole other stuff that has nothing to do with actual video games. So we will see. Who knows? Maybe maybe Sega is making their version of Super Smash Brothers for the Microsoft. Hey, guess what? Look, you're gonna have Marcus Fenix fighting Master Chief now. I don't know.
I really want to see another Sega All-Stars Racing.
I actually liked Sonic Tennis. But yeah, something is going on between Microsoft and Sega. It doesn't have to be an acquisition of Sega.
Yeah, I mean, they have, I will admit, they have been buddy-buddy. Yakuza 6, Like a Dragon, it was given priority release on Xbox.
Except in Japan, where it is still not available.
Wait, Yakuza?
Yeah, Yakuza Like a Dragon is not available on Xbox right now in Japan.
Oh. That's weird.
Which might explain why Microsoft only sent 6,000 units over to Japan. They're all sold out, but anyways. But yeah, something's going on. Like I said, all the Yakuza games are coming onto the Xbox. Yakuza was one of the featured games for the Microsoft Xbox Series X launch. So they do have a marketing deal going on at the very, very least right now. And who knows, you know, it could be an acquisition. And Microsoft can afford Sega. Sega would cost less than ZeniMax. Because say what you want about Sega, they really haven't had a smash hit outside of their Atlas games. And at all. Which makes me wonder, what if Microsoft buys Sega and allows Atlas to become independent? Although that makes a little sense because Atlas has to be getting their money from somebody. We will see. It's all speculation. Here's the thing. When you have the relaunch, you know, when you have the second batch of consoles coming out, I mean, Microsoft announced that they had purchased ZeniMax a day before the launch for a reason. And here's a little hint. They actually haven't purchased it yet. They're in the process. It's not going to be finalized until March. They have to get through a lot of legal stuff first, which is why Phil Spencer keeps on saying, well, we can't comment on that right now. We can't say about exclusivity because we don't own it yet.
Although they went and bought Smash.gg today. Did you see that?
No.
So, yeah, Microsoft just went and purchased Smash.gg, which is, for those who don't know, Smash.gg is, like, the foremost bracketing website for most fighting games. Very specifically Smash Bros., but also definitely Street Fighter V and Guilty Gear and pretty much all the other major ones. Everybody uses Smash.gg for that. Evo uses Smash.gg for bracketing on Evo.
I know why they're eager to sell. Because Smash.gg owed a lot of money to investors. A lot of money. From Spark Capital, SL, and Horizon Ventures. You can bet they wanted to get those guys off their back.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I've heard as well that they were in the black. Or not.
The red. In the red.
Yeah, in the red. So I wouldn't doubt that. But it's just interesting. Like, what is Microsoft going to do with Smash.gg?
Well, here's the thing. Microsoft closed down Mixer.
They're going to
close down Smash.gg? No, they're going to use Smash.gg as a streaming service that will replace Mixer, in which it's not It's not user content, but actual, you know, tournament content.
That makes no sense to me. Smash.gg has no video service. It's very specifically a bracketing service.
Well, here's the thing. This is from right here. The Smash GG deal is more about web content for MSN than it is about Xbox. However, MSN covers sports and entertainment news as a couple of its primary categories. There's a subcategory on MSN for esports news. So there's your answer.
So it's about esports, like getting into the esports pie.
Oh yeah, well Ubisoft's in it. You know, that's why they didn't allow Rainbow Six Siege to die, because they really wanted that esports pie. So
it just strikes me as weird. Like I don't know what Microsoft's scheme with Smash.gg is.
Well, Smash.gg supports more than 6,000 event or active events.
Sure, and none of them are Microsoft things.
Yeah, but I don't think Microsoft cares about that anymore.
The only thing that Microsoft does that Smash.gg would be
Killer Instinct
relatable to would be Killer Instinct.
I think, here's the thing, when Microsoft is letting Ori and Blind Forest go to the Switch and Cuphead go to the PlayStation, they're trying to build an ecosystem, right? It's all about building that ecosystem. Because who did Microsoft say their biggest competitors were? Google and Amazon.
Yeah.
I guess. I still haven't heard anything about this Amazon gaming whatever. And
it's Luna.
Media.
Well, Amazon has Luna.
I mean, you have a controller, and then what exactly? How are we supposed to play? Is it like a digital storefront like Steam, or I still don't know what Stadia even is.
Stadia is a streaming service, much like what xCloud is, and I'm still enjoying xCloud. As a matter of fact, with EA joining Game Pass, it's like now I can play Madden on my cell phone. Of course, it sucks, but I can play it.
It's like, I mean, I have no interest in Stadia or Amazon's game thing, but if Microsoft feels like they're the threat, then I guess so. But to me, Sony and Nintendo and Steam are the threat, but, you know, what do I know? I mean, that's the platforms I'm playing over Microsoft. So, but, you know, okay, they think the threat is Google and Amazon. Okay.
You know what I think also is that Microsoft is looking at these esports communities and saying if any of them get big, we will just slap our name on it, saying Microsoft presents Smash Bowl 2021.
The funnier explanation I heard is that Slack recently took a boost in stocks because they were getting there's rumor that they're getting acquired by another group, and Slack is basically the direct competitor to Microsoft Teams, which caused Microsoft stock to drop a little bit, and so they went and bought themselves a Smash GG as a consolation treat yourself thing.
Yeah, I'm looking at Smash GG. It's, you know, it's very functional, but I see all these people who are, you know, promoting their tournaments and stuff like that. I mean, you're looking at Smash Bowl 2021. You know, they're they have sponsors, and I'm thinking, you know what? Now Microsoft is a sponsor.
Right. Like, there's no doubt that there is value in Smash GG. It is... I can't think of any other specific, like, bracketing website that comes to mind when I think of fighting games. Like, even... Like I said, even Evo uses Smash.gg.
I'm just thinking, you know, Microsoft wants a piece of the pie, and here's the thing, when there's nothing stopping Microsoft from doing their own stuff in Smash GG.
But why build your own thing when...
Because now you can put it at the head of the thing, and you have some cred now. I don't know. It's just...
Well, what I meant was, why make your own thing when there's a perfectly functional thing out there?
Yeah, why build it when you can buy it? Yeah. Why build it when you can buy it? But Like I said, it's all part of Microsoft wanting to create an ecosystem. And I think this smacks to me of them looking ahead. You know, the entire reason they did xCloud is they know where console gaming is going, and they want to be first there.
I know that they aren't. I know that they aren't doing this because they're. Well, maybe they are, and it would be interesting. But like,
they're using this to promote Killer Instinct all over again.
Well, I was going to say, man, what if they're planning on something like integrating Smash GG into the Xbox Series X? But here's the problem with that. Nobody plays fighting game tournaments on Xbox. Nobody.
But here's the thing. Here's the other thing, though. It's not just about it's not just about the Xbox console. Keep in mind, you know. I mean, it's still an app. It can still be an app, you know. And who knows? Maybe they will start, you know, having live streams of fighting games. Maybe they'll add a functionality to like a list. Look, if you stream your tournament, we'll help you out with that, and we will get it. We will make it on the front page of the Xbox console and the Windows console. Mm-hmm. You know. We will help you promote this thing and help you grow your thing. Because the more these tournaments grow, the better it helps Smash GG, which the better it now helps Microsoft. And it gives Microsoft an air of legitimacy. And I think that's basically their goal, is just to have an air of legitimacy in the fighting community. You know? And Microsoft's goal right now has been to be extremely user-friendly. You know? They're very pro-consumer right now, because they have to be. Because they're fighting an uphill battle right now in the game space, but you know they're going to be like Ubisoft. You know, Ubisoft forced Rainbow Six Siege to be a player in the esports community. You know, they did it by constantly iterating, constantly saying, "Look at this," and not giving up.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, like I said, Microsoft is just building an ecosystem, and this is one part of it. Who knows? Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Super Gore Nest Master Level arrives in Doom Eternal update. This is from PlayStation Lifestyle. Doom Eternal got more challenging with the addition of new difficulty levels and a new mode tailored the game's latest Master Level. Today's update 4 has introduced the Super Gore Nest Master Level and the brand new Classic Mode, which is going to be harder than anything found in the game's original campaign. The new Master Level has been built from scratch to test players in a whole new way. Combat is altered by environmental hazards, new demon encounters, and other conditions that'll change things up. If that sounds too easy, the new Classic Mode means starting the new map with just a combat shotgun. New weapons and mods will be found throughout the Super Gore Nest if you want to complete the mode. Finishing the Master Level in different difficulties and modes will unlock player icons, nameplates, and other cosmetics. The ultimate prize are gold combat shotgun skin and classic green slayer skin. The newest trailer shows exactly what you're going to face. Along with the Master Level map, there are two additional difficulty levels been added today. Update 4 also fixes a few bugs from both the expansion, The Ancient Gods, and lays down the groundwork for the game's upcoming Christmas event, Gift Wrapped in Tear.
So, TJ, I'm pretty sure you're familiar with what's going on with Doom Eternal. And it seems like everybody's adding a new harder mode. Like, they just added one in State of Decay 2. That's even more difficult today.
Mm-hmm. Doom Eternal is a strange game.
Yes. There's a lot of platforming in it, which was a turnoff.
Yes. You know, okay. So, there's been a trend in 2020, and I don't know if you've seen it, but everybody is adding a hookshot to their game. Like, the grappling.
Including Halo.
Everybody's getting a grappling hook now. And Doom Eternal has it too, But Doom Eternal is like the one place in which it's not that fun. Like, in my one of my colleagues who can explain this better than me, because, like, Doom 2016 was great because it was a visual masterpiece and so visceral on every level, but you can also just kind of turn your brain off and get into the rhythm of murdering everything in sight. Doom Eternal breaks that up by, like, having bosses in the game that you literally have to change weapons in order to defeat them. And it like demands that you think about it for a second, which is just kind of weird. I don't know. Like, am I being weird by saying I don't want to think in a Doom game?
No, that was the main disappointment that I had in Doom Eternal. It's like, okay, I just want to have this gun. I wanted to point it at things, and I want to murder them. I do not want to have to think. I definitely do not want to have to do platforming. Because I played the first Doom way back in the day, you know. I played, and all that was running through corridors and shooting things and listening for the clop, clop, clop of those demons, you know. There's just too much going on in Doom Eternal.
What are you saying, Scott?
When I used to play Doom back in the day, the original, I would play in God mode because I didn't really care about thinking or doing anything. I just wanted to shoot some stuff for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And the thing about Doom Eternal is that the platforming that they put in the game isn't even particularly good platforming.
No, it isn't.
Like, the game is gorgeous. That's its point. It's gorgeous, and when it's moving at, like, 120 frames per second, it's insane.
Oh, by the way, that's the other problem, is that if you're going to have a game, and it's not the frame rate I'm talking about, I'm talking about it's the actual speed of your character, like, you just book through everything, you know. It's not a slow, you know. If you're going that fast through all these corridors and stuff like that, you shouldn't have to think, you know. You just shoot, you know. If I'm going at 100 miles an hour, I don't have to worry about platforming or worrying about my health, so I want to use the chain. What is it? You use a chain gun to make them spew out health potions or something like that. You know, there's specific ways you kill the monsters to get health back, right? Screw that. Yeah. Just have a health vial somewhere that I have to run to. There's an armor thing, I have to pick that up. Or quad damage. I know that's Quake, but, you know, or something like that. I don't want to have to strategize about how to kill the monsters to get health back. No. I just want to kill the monsters. You know, it's funny. Serious Sam 4, just have thousands of guys screaming without any heads and holding up bombs. That's what I want.
Yeah, and so the idea of a Doom difficulty level that takes everything that's already in Doom Eternal and makes it more annoying sounds unfun.
Actually, you know, I think they, here's the thing, they have the classic, I'm hoping, when they say the classic mode and the master levels and all that stuff, they take out all that stuff and just say, here, shoot it.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you're in a classic mode and only have a shotgun, I'm happy, just don't make me have to think about what I have to do. I just want, here's me, here's the, there's the enemy, I want him to smell the cordite.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. The master level sounds annoying. I don't want to take everything that annoys me about Doom Eternal and make it more annoying. The classic mode sounds intriguing.
Hopefully, by classic mode, and not just, oh, everything's going to hurt you more.
Yeah. But yeah, like, there, Doom Eternal is not a bad game, but
it's not Doom.
But it's nowhere near Doom 2016.
No, just say what it is. It's not Doom.
Also, like, yeah, and the reason that it's not Doom is that they tried too hard to, like, recapture lightning twice.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Glory kills should be hard to get. Because then they'll just get boring.
Mm-hmm.
You have to glory kill to get certain things, and just, you know, no, just make it like you actually manage to have them down to one hit point, exactly one hit point, then the glory kill will happen. Something that's rare, you know. Not, oh, I need to glory kill him to get some armor.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have an issue with that, because, like, that the whole, like, use the glory kill to get health back, use the chainsaw to get ammo for weapons back.
I have a problem with it. Oh, and here's the other thing, by the way. Because it's still a fast-paced game, the glory kills have to go in a flash, you know? No, I want a slow glory kill. I want to savor that, you know? That's why I also wanted to have it rare. So that when you do a glory kill, the game stops for a couple of, for like 10 seconds to let you enjoy it. You know, so you can have it more over the top. Not just, oh, I'm going to pluck his horn, stab it in his head, and boom, that's it. No, if it's going to be a glory kill, make it epic. You know, make the entire game stop and say, watch this. The, you know, it's like, it used to be that fatalities in Mortal Kombat were difficult to do. Now they're just easy. It's just a button press.
That's if you have the easy fatality tokens. There's still inputs in Mortal Kombat. They're just not as hard as, like, some of the old inputs in Mortal Kombat fatalities were insane.
Yeah. Friendship.
Yeah. But yeah, so it is what it is. Like, Doom Eternal, okay. If this is something that people were asking for, people that enjoy Doom Eternal, good for them.
Well, I mean, the entire trend has been, let's make it ultra hard mode for these things. They have this special Christmas DLC, free DLC for State of Decay 2, adds an even more difficult mode than even the Juggernaut Edition has, you know, that sort of stuff. It's fine. The funny thing is that I play on an easy level on State of Decay 2 because, not that I can't beat it on a difficult level, but because I'm the sort of person who enjoys seeing the emergent stories that happen when you play the game. Oh, by the way, I finished Watch Dogs Legion.
Oh, yeah? How did it turn out in the end?
I will say this, you know, I really, really, really like the story.
That's good.
Especially when you uncover the origins of Bagsley, who's the AI who helps you. Really sad story, and, you know,
it must have done something right to get you all the way to the credits.
Yeah, so next time I play, I'm probably going to play without the ultra permadeath. Because normally when you die, you get arrested, and, you know, your character's not available. I was playing on permadeath, in which they die, they die. But what interesting thing is that after I completed the main segment, all the special characters who had died were resurrected. Which was good, because my hypnotist got killed, and I love using her, because she is completely OP, and it's wonderful. Yeah, you can hack drones, but can you hack humans, too? Yeah, I just sneak around, and I look at one person. There's the captain. I point at him, say, yeah, the sun has to turn on your mates. And all of a sudden, everybody in the base is saying, holy shit, and the captain's attacking all of them. And no one knows it's because of me. It's just because they saw one of their coworkers go batshit crazy and kill everybody. And, oh, look, one of their droids also turned on them. And, oh, look, one of their turrets also turned on them. So the base is this one big, colossal fuck-up. And I'm outside sipping my tea because they don't know that I did it. It's like everything went into chaos all because of me. But they don't know it was my fault. They will not accuse. If they run outside the building, they'll just think I'm just some passerby. Yeah, one of the main parts of the game that I really like is the epic amount of trolling you can do in the game. You become a troll in Watch Dogs Legion if you do that build. So yeah, I mean, I'll probably play it again. I've been doing an achievement hunt, which is something I haven't done in a long while for any games, but I feel compelled to do the achievement hunt. I may just restart the game and play on easy with the permadeath turned off, just to enjoy the story and just to, you know, complete achievements. So yeah, it's a recommend. It's just the AI really needs work. I mean, there's one thing that really gets me angry is when a hostage won't follow you and you're just standing at the door gormlessly looking at you like, hey, what? Like a dog, you know, it's like, hmm? With their head tilted over. You know, like, what am I supposed to do now? You're supposed to follow me. What am I supposed to... Just follow me! I have to go over to them, push them out the door, say, follow me! There's one thing that... you gotta improve the AI, and then it'll be fine. Everything that bad that happens usually is my fault anyway. So yeah, Watch Dogs Legion, it's a thumbs up. It's a lot better than Valhalla. Valhalla sucks. Don't buy it unless you really need something that's going to help you sleep. If you thought or Odyssey was long and boring, well, guess what? Valhalla doubles down on that. By the way, you know, one of the reasons why Watch Dogs Legion is so good is that it is not done by the usual crew of Ubisoft. It's actually done by a developer, I forgot his name, who worked on the early open world games for Ubisoft when they still were concise. And that's why Watch Dogs feels so different from the other Ubisoft open world games. Watch Dogs Legion actually feels like an open world. It feels like something you go through and explore. Even if there's icons on the map, it doesn't feel like your typical Ubisoft open world game. Which deserves a golf clap on its own. And also, it doesn't chicken out on its politics, like, say, Far Cry 5. Nope, it has a message to say. And it has a lot to do with Donald Trump.
Yeah, don't even mention him on this.
I'm just saying, if you want a game that's political and doesn't shy away from it,
yeah,
Watch Dogs Legion. And here's the other thing is, it reaches that point of being over the top, but doesn't quite get there. You know, there are some games that are just beat you over the head. This one doesn't quite do that. And there's a lot of times in the game when you say, oh, no, 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 no! The story will take in some dark places. And it will not give you an out. It'll say, no, you're in this dark place, deal with it. And, it made me invested in the story, which is a lot more than I can say for most games that are not BioWare. So yeah, I mean, it was worth it for the story, and it's worth it for the characters and the gameplay things too. I did not like Watch Dogs or Watch Dogs 2. I like this one. If certain games are out already, I would have said it was my game of the year, but I'm pretty sure I'm gonna have to reserve that for a game that's coming out next week. Scott. You know, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, I'll be able to fully converse with you about Dragon Quest XI.
Awesome. I look forward to that.
So, are you going to be playing Dragon Quest XI, TJ?
Not anytime soon.
Okay.
There's a lot to do.
Yeah? And you have to reserve all your free time for Cyberpunk?
I gotta get my... Well, yeah.
There's only so much time in the day, so we have to prioritize what games we play.
Which is why I wasn't able to play a lot of Walking Dead.
Well, my team and I are going to have to, like, grind the shit out of that game and start writing guides for this holiday season, so...
And thank God for Smart Forward, by the way. Thank God for Smart Forward, because if I buy Cyberpunk 2077, guess what? When I finally get the ninth generation console, hey, auto upgrade! And kudos to CD Projekt Red for allowing that for the PlayStation as well. Because if you get the PS4 version of Cyberpunk 2077, if you own it, you get the PS5 version free.
Yeah, they're doing it on both consoles, so that's good.
So, have either of you played Yakuza Like a Dragon yet?
Not yet, no.
Okay. Scott, you have to play it, because it's basically Dragon Quest. It is Dragon Quest, but with the Yakuza license. Go ahead.
I don't think I'll be playing that game, but I looked at a video of it, and there is some blue little power effect, so I can see that.
Oh, there's a lot more to it than that. For one thing, the character constantly talks about being a Dragon Quest character. He's a huge fan, and he sees the world as a Dragon Quest game. Everything is in his head, and he views the world as a Dragon Quest game, and he views himself as a hero. And I discussed this last week. He has a normal haircut for the first part of the game. When he gets out of jail, he goes to a barber, and she screws up his hair, and he now has an anime hairstyle. So he looks like a Dragon Quest character with an anime hairstyle.
Okay.
Which is why he has that funky afro. It's not an afro, but it looks like one, right? But it's basically a funky anime hairstyle. The game...
I've seen other people talk about Yakuza, and you're the only one that mentions it being like Dragon's Quest.
It is a Dragon Quest game, though, because here's the thing. The game beats you over the head about it. If you play the story, you say, yeah, I always like to play Dragon Quest, and I always want to be a hero and all that stuff. And his friends say, you know what? If you want to be a hero and it's helping you move up in the world, fine. Just go with it. We don't care. You're not hurting us, you know? It's making you fight better. It's making you do all this stuff better. So if you want to envision yourself as a Dragon Quest hero, you go right ahead and envision yourself as a Dragon Quest hero. And he suddenly starts seeing enemies. They transform from normal people into Dragon Quest enemies. Or Dragon Quest-ish enemies, you know? Like these weird hyper versions of themselves. And the combat system is Dragon Quest. And, you know, that's why... It is a turn-based RPG, because the entire game is him thinking of himself as if he's in a Dragon Quest game. And the game constantly talks about Dragon Quest. He keeps on saying, well, you know, in Dragon Quest you do this, and in Dragon Quest you do that. You know? Well, so, what?
If they're saying Dragon's Quest, that's an...
Dragon Quest, not Dragon's Quest, Dragon Quest. They're talking about the game itself. I'm talking about how he used to play it when he was a kid. And all that stuff.
I get that, but wouldn't that open them to be sued by Square Enix by mentioning Dragon's Quest?
Because they're not using any licensing. You can say it all. Here's the thing. Marvel owns the rights to Captain Marvel. DC can call Captain Marvel all they like in the books. They just can't call the book Captain Marvel. That's why the name of the comic books will be Shazam, or The Power of Shazam. But in the book itself, he's Captain Marvel. Until recently when they changed the name to Shazam. But even so, you know, no, it's fair use. This is an example of fair use. They're talking about Dragon Quest. They're doing a parody of Dragon Quest. They're doing an homage to Dragon Quest. But they're not actually doing Dragon Quest. It's just like they're doing everything in the Dragon Quest style. And they talk about playing Dragon Quest. And even if they were inclined to sue them, why would they? They're hyping up the next Dragon Quest. It's basically one big Dragon Quest advertisement, because they're talking about how cool Dragon Quest is. Everybody likes it, from the Yakuza boss on down. Which is very funny to have a Yakuza boss tell you about Dragon Quest and how great it is. And again, the game has been around for the past 20 years in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean... If you want to do it, you're going to enjoy yourself playing Yakuza Like a Dragon, because it is unlike the other Yakuza Like a Dragon games in many, many ways. Although, like I said in last week, it is bizarre in that it goes from deadly, heartrending serious to goofy to serious and heartrending to over-the-top goofy to just batshit bonkers to serious again. It has so many mood whiplashes in it. It's like going from light to dark, light to dark, light to dark. And it hasn't been off-putting yet. It does flow. It's just strange. And I like strange. It encourages creativity. But I'm just saying, Scott, if you get into the Yakuza Like a Dragon, and I'm pretty sure you will at some point, it's the kind of game... Which, you know, it's going to be in the $15 bargain bin in like a year. It's a single-player game. It has a multiplayer mode. I'm just saying. It just strikes me as one of those great games that still becomes in the bargain rack. You know, $20 game.
Right.
Pick it up for $20. Enjoy it. You won't feel like, you know, you won't feel like you wasted your money.
Okay.
Just wait for it. If you're unsure about it, wait for it on sale and then play it. Just be warned that it goes from the opening cutscene is really depressing. And then it goes from depressing to not as depressing. But once he gets out of jail, it's sort of like, yeah, this, we're going to go wacky now. Oh, by the way, the main character also has the same determination as most anime characters. I got to do this, even though it makes no sense. I'm going to do it because I have to do it. It's one of those games where you say, you're an idiot. But the game knows he's an idiot.
I guess we showed how much we just buried the lead on Doom and just moved on to other topic of Yakuza.
Yeah, Doom is boring.
Doom is a better game.
Doom Eternal is just... it's disappointing.
Just meh.
Yeah, like I said, if I'm going to play a Doom game, I want to rip and tear.
It's a gorgeous, beautiful game that has plenty of good action. It just isn't a very good Doom game.
Yeah. And I think it knows this, and hopefully the next Doom game will be just, you know what, rip and tear. By the way, someone talked about the possibility of them bringing the Nintendo 64 Quake game to, since now Microsoft owns it. They already have Doom 64 coming out, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of people's introduction to Doom is Doom 64. Mm-hmm. Not mine, of course, but, you know. I just wish people were raised on something better than GoldenEye. It's like, you played one of the worst FPSs and you have it as this golden standard when really, in reality, it sucked balls.
Yeah.
Anyways. Although, you know what? That's a property that hasn't come out since, what, 2012 or 2013? It's a good Bond game. Has there been a good Bond game lately? No, there hasn't.
No.
I think, you know that they're making one, right?
I don't think I've played a good Bond game since GoldenEye.
You haven't played a good Bond game at all.
So wait, are you guys messing with me? You know they're making a Bond game, right?
Yeah, I mean, EA owns the license, I believe, and, you know...
No, it's the folks that do the Hitman series.
Oh, okay.
They announced it recently. Let me find this.
Oh, okay. Well, if it's recent, then that's fine. Yeah. You know what I'd really like to see again? No One Lives Forever. And I just want them to remaster the original game. Oh, that reminds me. Have you seen how the dreadful reviews the remaster of 13 has gotten?
Yeah, I hear it's not very good.
It's XIII. For one thing, they made it look like what's the name? They made it look like Fortnite. So they're cartoony, but they're not, you know, cartoons, but just cartoonish. And the AI is bugged, and the physics are bugged, and it's like Alien Colonial Marines Redux, which is a shame.
Yeah, so IO Interactive. IO Interactive announced recently that it's doing a thing called Project 007.
Okay.
They make the new Hitman. Well, they've always made the Hitman games. Can you think of anyone better suited to do a James Bond game than people who make Hitman?
Here's the thing. James Bond has always been an action game. I would like to see a stealth, third-person, tactical action game.
Then who better than the people who make Hitman?
I'm just saying, you know, here's the thing, I've never liked Hitman because I've always been colored by, Thief. Thief has always been the best sneaky assassination type game, even though you don't do assassinations in it. I always wanted a Hitman game that was more like Thief.
It's going to be like Hitman. This game is going to be like Hitman.
But I'm just saying, you know what? It would be interesting to see a James Bond game that isn't a pure action game. You know, not a shooter, not a racer, you know, but a stealthy, you know... I mean, act like a sneaky spy this time. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that anybody deserves this license more than IO Interactive, because I can't imagine anyone who would handle it quite as well.
Or, well... let's say, handle it quite as differently. I mean, I don't know if it'll do it well, but they'll definitely do it differently. Oh, by the way, they also had a new patch for Baldur's Gate 3, and one of the things that amused me was that the patch also made your companions less dickish. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm debating whether to get back into Baldur's Gate 3 or just wait a bit longer. That's one of the things about doing early access.
I think it's better to wait if they're still doing the early access stuff. There's probably a lot of stuff they're changing.
But I'm going to say this. You know, when I do play Baldur's Gate 3, I have been enjoying myself. So it looks like a winner.
That's good.
And all the niggling bugs that are in there, you know, I know they're going to be gone. Because they're very good about player feedback. So, yeah, I mean, once it's out, whatever it is, maybe late 2021, Scott, I think you'll really enjoy it. I'm already enjoying the conversations and the flexibility. One of my favorite things is, get this. Now, one of your companions is a vampire, right? A daywalking elven vampire. And if you're a druid, you can make him swear not to eat anything that can talk. And if you're a druid, he will say, "Well, that's not fair. You can talk to animals. What am I going to do? Eat plants and rocks?" And in the YouTube video, I love this statement. It said, "No one tell them druids can talk to trees, too." Yeah, so it has the same amount of fluidity that any Obsidian game or any Larian game, for that matter, has, you know, in which it'll know everything that you're doing and react to it so that, you know... Like, when I had my rogue, this little tiefling child tried to pull a con on me, but since I was a rogue with a high intelligence... I said, "Oh, I know that sleight of hand trick. Now watch this," and all that stuff, and basically showed him, "Yeah, don't try to con me. I know all of them." And my option was not to rip the kid off, right? Just let him know I know what he's trying to do. And the kid just laughs and says, "Okay, I'll go for dumber pigeons." So, yeah, everything in that game, there's some combat in which people have discovered. You know what? Sometimes the best combat is just to shove someone off a cliff. Which takes no very little skill at all, just some strength, and just push them. Don't bother attacking. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 is a winner. I still haven't seen the connections to the previous two games. They say that there's connections, right? So there's going to be something about, oh, damn, what is it? Not the God of Murder. What is it called again? Balspawn. There's something about the Balspawn is going to be in the game. We don't know what. I don't know what yet, though. So, but yeah, it is a connection, and it's, you know, the only problem I have is that since they removed the alignment, you know, everything's a morality of gray and gray, and I really want to play a lawful good character, so I'm trying to do lawful good stuff in it. We'll see. Anyways, wow, this has been a long podcast. Especially with only two news items. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so please come on to our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. I still have codes for Swim Sanity, so just reply into the comments and say what you liked about the episode, and I will shoot you off a code. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. Next week is fine. The week after that is fine. And, oh, you know, Christmas and New Year's fall on a Friday this year. That's pretty cool. So we'll be able to find out on the 28th what kind of toys you got. Unless you got your toys early. My toy will be getting myself a gym membership. Now that I can go back to the gym. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.